Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Chris Sidorek. And I have to be honest with all of you. One of my favorite moments in my day is when I get home from work and I get to just run around the house with my three-year-old, Seven. Quick shout out to Evan. Hi, buddy. It's his absolutely favorite game, if you can call it a game. Just running around in circles, and I chase him until he decides he wants to chase me. And sometimes he just likes to run side by side and we take turns passing each other. You can hear in his laughter the pure innocence and joy of it all, and I wouldn't trade those moments for absolutely anything in the world. But what I never realized was that those moments could actually be crucial for his development in a number of ways. In fact, a recent report has found that play, and we're talking about loose, unstructured, true childhood play here, can help build stress management skills and improve relationships. Dr. Michael Yogman, the chief of division of ambulatory pediatrics at Mount Auburn Hospital, is the lead author of that report, and he joins me now in studio. Dr. Yogman, welcome.
Thank you so much, and I'm thrilled to hear how much you enjoy playing with your three-year-old.
It's just, there's something about being around a kid. I feel like you just, that's what you want to do, is you just want to have kid play with them. It's great. So I'm curious, what led you to study play?
Well, a bunch of things. One is that I spent a lot of time as board chair at the Boston Children's Museum watching parents and children just joyfully play with their kids and talk about how wonderful it was that there was a safe place where diverse kids and families could play together. And then, of course, I see it all the time in the waiting room of my pediatric office, that kids are building block towers, other kids are knocking it down, they're rebuilding it, they're negotiating, they're problem solving. That's what it's all about. And they were much happier playing in the waiting room than they were coming into my office and getting their immunizations.
I bet. All right. So you do this study. Tell us a little bit about the study and what you found out.
Well, so it really were three major conclusions. One is that play with caregivers, peers, and teachers is brain building. It's not frivolous. It reinforces exactly what you were saying, that it enhances brain structure and function. Secondly, that playful learning, and it's not play without learning. Playful learning is a fundamental part of healthy development and is crucial for 21st century skills such as executive function, collaboration, and innovation. I was really surprised and delighted when last Sunday's op-ed in the New York Times by Jeremy Haidt talked about we need to get play back in our children's lives as an antidote to the kind of partisanship we've been hearing about so much in the news lately. And people, if they learn to play better, would learn to negotiate and cooperate and build bridges.
Interesting.
And third of all, I think here's a really important point. There's a lot of stress in people's lives these days. There's a lot of anxiety and depression in college, in middle school, in high school. But play, through encouraging parents, as you have, to engage in these on-the-floor back and forth relationships with their kids, the safe, nurturing relationships. That's what we know mitigates that kind of stress and promotes resilience. And anything that supports that kind of relationship building is a tremendous asset for parents and children. So the statement is really a statement to value play, to encourage parents to make time for it, and not to substitute that kind of time with their child for necessarily for digital media, for, go outside, smell the flowers, find safe playgrounds. As cities, we need to develop and create safe spaces for kids to play outside. We need to encourage preschool to incorporate a balanced curriculum with playful learning, not just teaching kids to take tests. And we need to create urban landscapes that use things like bus stops and supermarkets to have prompts for parents to engage with their kids, counting apples, doing hopscotch at bus stops, so kids can use those lost opportunities to engage with their parents and learn.
So you used the phrase playful learning there a couple of times. Tell us a little bit about what that is.
Well, so there are there's free play, where kids are both initiating it, directing it, and then there's what I'd call guided play, where parents may have a learning goal or teachers may have a learning goal in mind, but they let the child direct the play and have the agency to develop the curiosity and the joyful discovery in play. I love a quote by George Bernard Shaw that I want to get in our limited time, which is that we don't stop playing because we grow old. we grow old because we stop playing. So I think that really says what it means for parents to play as well. The joy that you experience with your three-year-old.
So what happens to a kid who doesn't get necessarily the amount of play that they should? Do you see something in terms of brain development that just doesn't quite click?
Well, development is complicated, and I don't want to attribute it to any specific thing. Certainly in animal studies, play deprivation did show central nervous system deficits. But kids are resilient, and we know from the studies in Romania that kids that were had been in orphanages and were placed in high-quality foster care recovered, so that things are not as irrevocable in early childhood, but it takes a lot more work to promote that kind of recovery and resilience if it doesn't start from the get-go. And so we want parents whose three-month-old smile to realize how important it is to smile back and to vocalize back and forth. That kind of turn-taking is critical for the pragmatics of language development.
So there's so much kind of structure that's going on in our kids' lives these days between sports teams and clubs and activities. I think it's all well-intentioned, but do you think that we're kind of over-programming kids' lives at this point?
Yes, I think that a combination of parents feeling that success is contingent on having kids engaged every minute in some structured activity, the preschool curriculum, the prevalence of unsafe playgrounds. I think people have not valued play, and I think there are surveys that the amount of time kids spend playing has decreased by 20 to 30% over the last 10 years. Kindergartens have, because of academic pressures, have eliminated recess. About 30% of kindergartens no longer offer recess. When we worry about overweight and obesity, and we know how important physical activity is, what is the point of eliminating recess in kindergarten? What's the message we're giving? So I think this is a broad message to parents that seize the opportunity. This is valuable. And get down on the floor with your child and enjoy it.
I'm guessing that, like most things in life, this is kind of all about balance, because there must be benefits from things like organized sports or things like that.
Absolutely. It is all about balance. And I think all we're saying is to try to keep that balance, redress the imbalance, and find the right happy medium.
Yeah. You've talked also a little bit about kind of the environment and how that plays into this. What do you think we should be doing when we're looking at the spaces that kids are occupying?
Well, playgrounds, for one thing. I think there are enormous opportunities for puzzles on the walls of playgrounds, for hopscotch things to teach kids about math skills. That's what I mean by playful learning, where adults can build in a structure that enables kids to both play and to direct what they're doing, but to learn at the same time.
Right. So is there a lesson here for schools and teachers in terms of the curriculum? How do you think they can kind of incorporate these findings?
One is, I think that allowing kids to have recess, not punishing kids who may misbehave by docking them from recess, that's the wrong message. And there's a concept called scaffolding that I think is really important in learning, which is to allow kids to tinker, allow kids to develop their curiosity. And for teachers not to be overly intrusive, but to jump in when a child gets stuck. I think that model of learning is going to encourage the kind of problem solving, the kind of task persistence, and ultimately the kind of creativity and collaboration that CEOs have described as what they're looking for in the future workforce.
I think one of the major challenges for parents who are trying to maybe encourage their kids to play is the prevalence of electronics, tablets, TV, video games, what have you. Is there a way to either incorporate that, or what do you recommend parents that you see?
So it's a complex issue, and some of the issues of decreased play antedated the iPad and the iPhone, so that we don't want to just blame digital media for this. But I think that to the degree that digital media can involve interactions with parents, with adults, with teachers, and with peers, that can be beneficial. It can allow kids to do creative things, but I think it requires that kind of social interaction and engagement rather than just this passive occupation with a screen.
And what about adults? Is there any benefit for us playing with the kids?
You bet. You bet. I think that even just reading children's books reminds us of our own childhood. And playing with the basic toys with your child, as you described, the joy of coming home and running around the room with your three-year-old. I mean, that's what keeps us young as adults.
All right, I'm going to go build my Lego rocket. All right. That's Dr. Michael Yogman, Chief of the Division of Ambulatory Pediatrics at Mount Auburn Hospital. He's the lead author of the report, The Power of Play, A Pediatric Role in Enhancing Development in Young Children. Dr. Yogman, thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it. That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Jamie Bologna, Paris Alston, and Zoe Mitchell, with help from Eve Zuckoff and Walter Wuchman. Tim Skog is our technical director. We had engineering help today from Matt Lissette. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Chris Siderick. Have a great weekend, and join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.